Terry Gross is out sick today. I'm Amy Sallet. Actor Danny Thomas died early this morning. We remember him with an interview Terry recorded a few weeks ago. When TV first made its way into America's homes in the early 50s, Thomas was there in his sitcom Make Room for Daddy. In it, he played an entertainer trying to maintain a normal family life while pursuing a show business career on the road. Thomas later became a successful television producer, creating shows such as The Dick Van Dyke Show, The Andy Griffith Show, and Mod Squad. Danny Thomas grew up as Amos Jacobs, one of 10 children in a large Lebanese family. He was one of the first people in show business to include his Lebanese heritage in his public persona. Terry Gross spoke with Thomas when his new autobiography, Make Room for Danny, came out. He told Terry that when he was starting out, the public wasn't used to seeing Lebanese characters on TV.
They didn't really know about us and the migration of our people, which is why on television I brought that to the fore. This Lebanese boy, American, of course, we were all born here. So I was the hook-nosed Lebanese from Toledo, Ohio. Then I got Hans Conried to play Uncle Tanous, and then the Lebanese were then known.
Early on in your career, did people assume you were Jewish?
Yes.
Why?
Very much, because I did a lot of Yiddish comedy that I learned in burlesque as a candy butcher selling soda pop and ice cream bars and stuff and prize packages later. I was 11 years old when I started working like that, and I did that till I was 18. So I really got an education for this God-given profession in the early days of burlesque.
Several people early in your career told you you'd never get ahead in show business unless you got your nose fixed. Now, Louis B. Mayer was one of the people who told you that. What exactly did he say?
Well, I just made light of it. I said, well, Mr. Mayer, L.B. Mayer of MGM, you know, said to me, you will go a long way. I was doing a character role, a Greek clockmaker for Margaret O'Brien and Sid Charisse and Karen Booth in a movie called The Unfinished Dance. Then Mr. Mayer sent for me, and he said, you know, this is a fairyland, the movies. The not-so-good-looking people go to the movies to see the princess and the prince, and they win each other, and they fantasize that that's their life. So if you had an unsightly wart on the side of your face, wouldn't you have it removed? And I said to him, Mr. Mayer, I know what you're talking about, but it's right in the middle of my face, and I use it for breathing.
So,
and then Jack Warner wanted me to test for I'll See You in My Dreams opposite Doris Day, and I refused. I said, if you see a couple of hundred feet of me in black and white, you'll scream, get that aardvark off my lot. And he said, and you won't have your nose fixed. I said, no, sir. I was then the highest paid nightclub entertainer in the country. And I said, I didn't tell him that. And he said, you want me to give you the part, predicated on what? And I said, did you read the script? He said, don't be a smartass. I said, I'm not being a smartass, Mr. Warner. If you read the script, you know you can't have a good-looking man in this part. You know, they tried. Cary Grant turned it down. Frank Lovejoy they wanted. And Gordon McRae. But, you see, they didn't understand that this was a not good-looking man, a little fella, almost bald-headed, kind of heavy. And his physiognomy dictated that he would never say, I love you, to a woman. He was very shy. And I said, do you know why, Mr. Warner? Because he never believed a face like this could say, I love you, to a face like hers and get away with it. He hadn't read the script. It startled him. And I got it without fixing my nose, and then next was a jazz singer, and they didn't dare bring up nose anymore. And those were the two best things I've ever done on film.
Why didn't you ever consider fixing your nose?
Well, people used to make jokes about my nose, and I used to do a lot of jokes about my nose. Also, to be handsome and a nightclub entertainer, and of course I'm primarily a storyteller, but if I were to look down at the ringside at a very beautiful girl and her escort was never threatened by me. As a matter of fact, when I went overseas with Marlene Dietrich to entertain the troops in North Africa and Italy and Sicily and Sardinia, my opening line always was to the guys, the only reason I came here, you guys are about these Dear John letter. Don't you ever worry about anybody, any man back home stealing your wife or your sweetheart, because I came here to show you what kind of man is left in the States, and I would put my lower lip under my upper lip and turn and give them a good profile, and they would scream. They would applaud like crazy. And that was my opening line, and I won them. They didn't heckle. They didn't throw paper airplanes at me and stuff, and I was warned that they would do that. But they didn't. That opening line disarmed them, as I discovered.
I'm wondering, when you watch movies now or television, do you have a good time watching people who had nose jobs over the years? <There's> lots of people who have.
Yeah, well, they wanted to be in leads, you know, and that never was my... And then when the Italian movies came out, then Bogey and other guys came along who were not Adonises. They were real. They were real people. And beautiful women fell in love with guys with irregular features, for heaven's sake. And I married a very beautiful little Sicilian girl, and she thought I was the most handsome thing in the world. Betty Grable told me that I was handsome. Ava Gardner said, you're a pretty man. Pretty? They like it, the little irregular. They don't want a guy shouldn't look like a girl, for heaven's sake.
We're going to take a short break. Danny Thomas spoke with Terry Gross a few weeks ago. Thomas died early this morning. This is Fresh Air. Let's get back to Terry's interview with Danny Thomas.
Now, I want to ask you about Make Room for Daddy, which later became the Danny Thomas Show. This is your sitcom that ran from 1953 to 1964 and is still on cable and reruns. In the show, it was, you know, it was a, you played a nightclub singer and comic, and it was about you and your family. Tell me how you came up with the premise of you actually doing what it is that you did, you know, being a showbiz personality.
Well, it was an accident, really, because Louis Edelman, who produced I'll See You in My Dreams and The Jazz Singer, when Louis was let out of Warner Brothers, and the William Morris Agency, my mentor, Mr. Abe Lasfogel, the head of it, and I always called him Uncle Abe. He's the man responsible for me. They said, well, ABC was starting a network, and they were hiring people. They wanted Ray Bolger. And Uncle Abe said, you can have Ray Bolger, but you got to take Danny Thomas, too. They didn't want Danny Thomas at that time. So he said, well, they go together. And he convinced him, and he took me. Now I got Mr. Edelman to come, and Mel Shavelson, a great writer, and Mel knew me, so I invited him to the house to please let's talk about a premise. And we talked about a theatrical boarding house and this and that. And Mel said, I don't know, I can't come up with anything here, and I don't have time. I've got another project. And then I got up and made an impassioned plea to help me get on TV. And so I started walking up and down and saying, fellas, I haven't got a private life anymore. My son is 5 years old. I had nothing to do with him so far to raise him. And my daughters are growing, and I, Marlo and Teresa, and I bring home the wrong gift, the wrong toy, that my dog attacks me. My kids call me Uncle Daddy. And I'm going on. I said, I'm on the road. My daughter Marlo wrote an essay, Viva Today. My father, like every other man, is worried about securing tomorrow. What's the matter with today? My father goes everywhere, securing tomorrow for his loved ones and himself. But unfortunately for him, when his tomorrow is secure, when his tomorrow comes, his loved ones will be grown and gone, and his will be an empty tomorrow. Well, I tears came to my eyes. I'm reading this English class, eighth grade essay, Viva Today. And that's when I said, guys, I got to get on and so forth. And I'm saying, I'm on the road half the time, blah, blah, blah. And Mel said, for heaven's sakes, that's the premise. And I said, what's the premise? I had no idea that he meant what I was raving about, what I was begging for. And Lou said, oh, my goodness, yeah. And we'll call it Uncle Daddy. And Mel said, I could write that pilot overnight. And then I suddenly realized what he was talking about.
Well, it worked,
then,
yeah.
He said, sure, then you'll go the days when you made your vow to St. Jude, help me find my way in life, and you had a tough time. And I said, oh, wait a minute, wait a minute. I hear what you're saying. Let's not do that. Let's pick me up right now. We have two cars. My wife has a mink coat. My kids aren't hungry. And I'm working steadily, making good money. And so then they said, my wife was over, was listening. She said, no, you got to call the show Make Room for Daddy. Why? Well, when Danny's on the road 10, 12 weeks, Marlo or Terry or both will move in to our bedroom and their little panties and stockings and whatever, slips and what have you, wind up in Daddy's dresser drawers. Then when I know Daddy's coming home, I get a wire arriving Tuesday. I say, okay, kids, let's make room for Daddy. So all of their stuff has got to come out of my dresser drawers so that I can get my stuff in there. And that's how that happened.
I have to tell you, I saw a picture of you in the New York Times the other day with your big cigar.
Yeah.
Something of a trademark for you, isn't it, a cigar?
Only in Make Room for Daddy.
I
never use a cigar on a stage, on a nightclub floor, never. And yet people say to me, I wasn't sure it was you until I saw the cigar. I say, really? But so that had to come out of TV.
Do you still smoke cigars, or is it just a prop for you?
Oh, yeah, no, I smoked. I chew it more than smoke it. I consume it backwards. I chomp on it so hard, and I don't inhale. But I only consume about 3 cigars a day, and I bet I don't smoke a half of one each time.
Your family never complained that your cigar smelled up the house?
My cigar smells? I beg your pardon. I smoke Macanudo, Prince Philip, ma'am. George Burns' cigar might smell. He smokes the cheapest cigar in the world with a piece of paper wrapped in it so it'll stay lit. And when he gets good cigars, he sends them to me. He's one of my closest friends in the world. I worship him. And I said, why don't you keep them? He said, they don't fit in my... He uses a little cigar holder, you know.
I have to ask you about your daughter, Marlo Thomas.
Yeah.
Now, she's well-known not only for her work on a sitcom, That Girl, but also for being a feminist and for her Free to Be You and Me.
Yeah.
Was it hard for you to understand when she became a feminist? And I see this as a kind of generational difference.
No, it didn't. You know, I do not criticize or interfere with my daughter's political philosophy, the women's lib, ERA, or Philip Donahue, my beloved son-in-law. We don't talk about religion or politics.
Danny Thomas spoke with Terry Gross a few weeks ago. Thomas died this morning of a heart attack. He had just written an autobiography called Make Room for Danny. I'm Amy Sallet.